As a mom of three boys, I was excited to have this conversation with Rich Weinfeld today, talking about helping boys succeed in school, and specifically, how do we individualize the education that they're receiving, addressing the needs of the child, and meeting the students where they are, not only academically, but developmentally and socially. Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. If you are a new parent to special education or a seasoned parent sitting at the IEP table, come join us as we dive deeper on how to help boys succeed in school. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am a mom and special educator. I have sat at both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional. Over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, download, give us a like and a follow, and even give us some feedback on how we're doing. Let's get ready to strategize special education style. Welcome to the show. Rich, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time and looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Wendy. And I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to speak about one of my favorite topics that I'm most passionate about, boys.
I love that. And before we jump in to have you introduce yourself, I was taking my oldest son. We have three boys. He's a senior in high school taking his final exam today. And I mentioned to him that I was recording with you on the podcast and the topic was helping boys succeed in school. And I said, do you have any questions? And he said, it's a pretty interesting topic. So a stamp of approval from a 17-year-old.
Yeah, that's good. That's good that he's that aware of it. That's great.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your experience, who you are, specifically how you help folks strategize in the world of special education?
Sure. Well, I'll try to be brief, but it's hard to be brief when you're finishing your 48th year in education. So that's, I was just noting that the end of this week will be the end of my 48th year. So I worked in Montgomery County Public Schools for 30 years, which I had many wonderful experiences. I taught elementary school, worked most of my career with special education students, every disability, every age group. I worked a lot with kids with emotional challenges. I ran a middle school learning center that was a regional program for kids with disabilities who couldn't be programmed for in their own neighborhood schools. Finished my career in Montgomery County as the director for Twice Exceptional Kids, also called GTLD, Gifted with Learning Disabilities, but really encompasses many different disabilities, not just learning disabilities. And then retired 18 years ago and no idea of forming a business or anything like that. Just thought I wanted to keep helping parents to make sure their kids were getting what they needed and let it be known that I could be hired for advocacy work, and the floodgates quickly opened and I had more work than I could do. And fortunately kept having new people appear to me who were interested in working with me and were very qualified. And that was the birth of the Weinfeld Education Group, commonly known as WEG for our initials. We have grown to be 15 special education consultants who are incredible experts in every area of disability, every age group. We work all over Virginia, DC, and Maryland. And now with the advent of virtual conferencing, such as we're doing today, we're working all over the country. So it's been an incredibly rewarding second career. Very, very proud of WEG and very grateful for the wonderful people I'm working with.
That's fantastic. And 48 years is something to be applauded for. So thank you for all you have done for the community and for our special education families and supporting them to access services that will benefit their academic outcomes and life outcomes. So let's start off and hone in. You have a book and it's called Helping Boys Succeed in School. And that really is Our primary focus today is helping boys succeed in school. What specific challenges are boys facing in school right now?
Yeah, so I wrote the book Helping Boys Succeed in School over 15 years ago. And it came out of a long-term concern that I had had with the over-identification of boys for special education programs, particularly programs for kids with emotional challenges, a knowledge that boys were just not doing as well in our schools as girls. In researching for that book, I uncovered many important statistics about how boys were falling behind and was able to make many suggestions about ways that we could address this. Over the years, I've paid attention when new books have come out, and I want to really emphasize there's a new book that just came out of Boys and Men, written by Richard Reeves from the Brookings Institute. And it fresh off the press, 2022. It's incredibly well-researched, great recommendations. And I want to say that the things that I saw 15 years ago are still very prevalent and even have gotten worse in many, many cases. And the solutions that he offers are very similar to solutions that I've offered over the years. I was very glad to see the new research supporting what we had found years ago. Was not glad to see that boys are still in as much of a problem area as they are.
Can you share some of those statistics that are out there in terms of the impact for boys?
Yeah, there are so many different measures that show that our boys are not keeping up in school, making the progress that they should be. Let me start by giving a couple disclaimers that are always important, that I'm sure these things are popping into lots of your viewers' heads right now. First of all, this is not about boys versus girls. We thankfully have paid a lot of attention to our girls and seen a lot of progress. We still have a long way to go. We're not through with helping girls and doing all the things that we know are making an impact there. So as Richard Reeves says, we can hold two thoughts in our mind at the same time. We can still focus on our girls and also focus on our boys. The other disclaimer is, of course, all boys are not the same. All girls are not the same. There's lots of differences, lots of individual differences. We'll be talking today very much in generalities, but generalities proven by research and statistics. So to address your question, boys are not doing as well in school. When we look at measures of reading and writing progress, boys are not doing as well in school at participating in advanced classes, gifted education. Boys are not graduating high school at the same rate as their female counterparts. They're not enrolling in college at the same level. They're not completing college. They're not going on to graduate degrees. They're having more mental health issues. They was just reading in Richard Reeves' book last night, 3-to-1 is the statistic of how many more boys are committing suicide than girls. And coming out of the pandemic, everyone is in what a colleague of mine called period of post-traumatic stress disorder, but it's really hitting our boys very hard. And so I could go on and on about the statistics, and I want to say they apply to every economic group. They apply to every racial and ethnic group, and they apply across the world and to different countries. So it's this phenomenon is happening everywhere. And the last thing I'll say is that although it does apply across the board, the boys who already were having significant challenges, boys in poverty, Black boys, Latina boys, those are the boys that are hit the hardest by the problems that we'll talk about today.
First, I like that you clarify this is not a boys versus girls, that we're just specifically looking at this population of boys and talking through their needs and how we can better support as a community of professionals, colleagues, parents to better support those outcomes. Why do you think their needs are not being met?
So it's a complicated question. I'll unpack some of the ideas that I think are most important, and certainly there are other theories out there as well. I think it starts with when boys enter school. There was a time that people as old as me can certainly remember, maybe even a little bit younger, where kindergarten was the truck corner and the building block corner and, you know, the art corner. And it was kind of a fun, but, you know, kind of let's get ready for the learning that's going to come in the future years. Kindergarten is now a serious academic grade. And it's a grade where you start to learn to read and learn to write. Many of our boys, a high number of our boys, are not ready for that developmentally. So they come into school and their first experiences with school are at best difficulties and at worst failure, seeing that they really learning at a very early age that school is not for them, that it's not a place where they're going to be successful. School doesn't play to their needs for movement, experiential learning. It's very focused on the reading, writing, math that these boys are not ready for. So that's part of it. Then throughout their school years, there is now much more of an emphasis on reading and writing. And I saw this really begin with the mandated state testing that came about starting in the 1980s. I think the testing is a good thing because I think schools should be accountable and we should know how our kids are progressing and how effective our schools are. But there's such a focus on reading and writing in the testing that schools, in order to show that they're performing well, have gone to extraordinary lengths to make sure students do well with reading and writing. So what happens now is there's more time in the day devoted to teaching reading and writing. Reading and writing now become part of virtually every subject during the day. So even if you're in math class, which used to be an area where boys could really shine, you not only have to solve the problem, but you have to write about how did you solve the problem. So math now is one more language arts class that boys may not, while they might be strong in math, may not be good in the writing part. Less parts of the day that are options for movement, recess, physical education. Many school systems are cutting back on the time allotted to those things. And those are things that for all kids, but I think especially for our boys, are really crucial to make them available for learning. Again, subjects like then called shop or industrial arts, and now it's technology education is what it's most often called. Again, lots of reading and writing involved, not just hands-on. And again, the hands-on experiential are where boys can shine and really develop their skills, but they're finding every period of the day has something to do with reading and writing, which may be a difficult area for them or not a preferred area.
Which leads me nicely into my question about boys that are identified or even not identified experiencing learning needs and differences. What does that world look like for them in school as a student with a disability?
Yeah. So again, very complex question, and I'll try to give a thoughtful answer to that. So boys absolutely need help in the language arts areas. And sometimes that can be done effectively just by the general ed instruction. And for many kids, many boys, that works well. For other boys, they need more specialized instruction, smaller classrooms. They need evidence-based interventions that we know when they're provided in a way that they're intended to be provided, certain numbers of times a week, certain amount of time a day, that they are effective. Often that only comes through special education. So to access that type of instruction for some boys who have been resistant to the typical interventions we do for reading and writing is crucial. What I worry about and what I've seen happen for a lot of boys is they're struggling with their reading and writing. So now they're starting to behave badly. They're starting to act out, be the class clown. it's better to get in trouble for being the bad boy than to be the dumb boy. And they'll do anything to hide the fact that they really have struggles with reading and writing, including acting out or showing bad behavior in one way or another. And so what happens then in terms of special ed, we might only see the behavior, and we might just look at the boys and say, well, they really need a program for students with emotional challenges. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with programs or services for students with emotional challenges, because that certainly is what some boys and girls need, if we're not really seeing the root of the problem, which may be their struggles with reading and writing, and also maybe the fact that they don't fit well into the school structure, then we may be wrongly identifying them for a special ed program or special ed services that really miss the target of their needs, which is to be taught in different ways, to be taught how to improve in their academic deficits, but not necessarily to have the focus be just on their behavior or primarily on their behavior.
How can we ensure that we see our boys and even all of our students as learners versus just looking at the outward behavior and then categorizing them based on that behavior? How can we as professionals, as educators, take a look at that behavior and do better in a sense, in terms of really kind of sifting through what is a result of the behavior and what is in fact possibly a learning disability?
Yeah, I think it should start with us doing some real analysis of how are we teaching our boys, you know, both in my book, Helping Boys Succeed in School, and in Richard Reeves' new book of Boys and Men. And we talk about the structure of school and how boys are just not a good fit in many ways for that structure. And I spoke about that in some of your other questions, but you know, we need more movement. We need to have more hands-on experiential learning. We need to have more opportunities for boys to use their visual spatial strengths, if that's a strength area for them. We need more men teaching boys. And that is a problem that in the 15 years between these two books that I keep alluding to, as it has gotten worse. We don't have enough men teachers, enough men role models for our boys during the school day. So in answer to your question about, you know, looking at boys' problems, I think the first thing is we need to step back and say, why are these things trending so badly? And what can we do in a more systemic way to make changes? When we think about the individual boy, though, today in third grade class who is struggling with reading and writing and maybe starting to act out behaviorally, so we need to bring together a collaborative team at the school level to really look at this one individual student. And that collaborative team should include special educators, general educators, psychologists, speech pathologists, occupational therapists, guidance counselors, school administrators, along with the parents and their experts. And the idea must be to all work together to identify what are the students' current functioning levels, where are they strong, where do they have challenges, and then to together look at what are the evidence-based interventions we can bring to work on the challenges while at the same time paying attention to the strengths and continuing to nurture the strengths. You know, I've seen many schools do these meetings very effectively, be inclusive of parents, work with the parents, experts from outside the school, and really make a difference in the individual boys. So, you know, in answer to your question, we should be working both at the systemic level, looking for changes we can make that are going to benefit all kids, boys and girls, but also we have to pay attention to the students right now who are struggling, who are suffering, and make sure we have a good individualized plan for those students.
And I like how we went from this macro to micro, because individuals that may be listening to us may be thinking, what can I do today in my building for my child? What can I do? And so you mentioned that collaborative team. Can you give me a personalized example of how a student has been referred to that collaborative team, and how have you seen it work really well?
Yeah, so many examples to draw on, but you know, let me just say I often, and we as a group, Winefield Education Group, often get called into cases where a boy is struggling, and I'd say a majority of our cases are about boys. We certainly serve girls as well, but majority of our cases are boys, and we review the child's records thoroughly. We speak to all the folks in the school and outside the school that might be involved. But one of the most important things we do is we go into the classroom and we observe the child. And we may be, in the instance I'm thinking of, we might be called to get involved because the student's behavior has become challenging in the classroom. And there's going to be a team meeting to discuss what to do for this child and possibly whether or not to identify them as having an emotional challenge and get them services for that emotional challenge. Well, I can think of many examples where sitting in that classroom, I do see that boy misbehaving, but I notice it's when they're asked to write something or asked to read something. And at other times in the observation time, they're not misbehaving. So what's going on, you know, with that specific time, and that what are the challenges in that reading and or writing area that are possibly causing this boy to misbehave at those times? So maybe we need more assessment. So then to your question, going to the team, and as special education consultants or advocates at WEG, one of our primary values is collaboration. So when we go into that team, we're not trying to blame or make the school people wrong or why haven't you done this, but let's together look at this one child and how they're functioning right now and think, how can we help them? And we know there's good people who are on the quote other side of the table. I don't even like to use that term anymore, because it's really one table that we're all at together. But we know there's good people all around, and we were some of those good people when we worked for the school system, and most of the experts at WEG did work in the public schools at some point. So it's back to the case. I would come to the case after my observation and say, you know, when I observed this young man, I saw that the times that he was really acting out is when he was asked to read or to write. What information do we have about how he's doing in those areas? Let's look together at it. Okay, so we see there was some testing a few years ago and things looked okay at that point, but that's a few years old. So let's do some new testing. Let's make sure we're getting very good assessment to really look deeply at maybe he knows how to decode, you know, put the letters and sounds together and say those letters, but maybe he can't read fluently. So now that his classmates in third grade are starting to read really fluently, he's falling behind and he knows he reads slowly. And maybe some of his buddies laughed at him the last time he did read aloud. So let's just look more deeply together to establish what are his real levels of functioning in all areas that might be affected, including not only the behavior, but the reading and writing. And then after we get that information and we do the assessment, and then let's come back together, look at it together, and then think about what are the interventions he needs, and are they interventions that are available in general ed, or does he need specialized instruction through special ed to get those interventions?
What can educators and an IEP team contribute to really address the specific challenges a boy's face in school?
So the special educators probably can't make the systemic changes that we're talking about, but what they can do, along with parents and the other experts in the meeting, is make sure that we're using evidence-based intervention to address whatever the challenges are of the boy in question. We also look at accommodations in every IEP meeting and also in every 504 meeting. What are the things that every teacher can put in place that are going to help this boy learn? And those, you know, often are very relatively easy things that that any teacher can do. We don't even need a special ed teacher to do them, such as let's let this boy sit up front so they're close to the point of instruction. Let's make sure that they can move, not only whenever they want to, but let's build in some movement breaks so that it helps them to get out some of their excess energy and then be able to focus more. Let's make sure that they can hear the information as well as read it, because we know for one reason or another, reading it is not easy for them, maybe not motivating for them. Maybe there's a disability in that area, but whatever the reason is, let's let them hear the information. It doesn't always have to be about actually reading the information. When it comes to writing, again, accommodations could include, if writing is not the specific goal of the lesson, let's let them demonstrate their understanding in other ways that might be in line with their strengths. My own son, when he was in school, was very interested in filmmaking. He was able to approach his teachers and say, you know, instead of writing that essay in social studies class, could I demonstrate my understanding by doing a short film? And very often teachers in Montgomery County allowed him to do that, and that helped him to thrive. So all these things are accommodations that any general education teacher can do. They can become part of a 504 plan or an IEP, or they can just become part of a good best practices plan in a classroom for a kid who's not identified as having a disability or needing special education.
Let me ask you, you mentioned evidence-based intervention or instruction. And I've had parents say to me, you know, the school says they don't have the resources or staff to really implement evidence-based instruction support in terms of a pullout kind of small group. What is your response to that?
Well, my thought is that's a terrible answer on the part of the school. Hopefully I don't say that. I might say it sometimes. We are charged by the federal law, by state laws, by just good educational practices at providing what each student needs to access instruction. So if the student needs an evidence-based intervention, we must find the way to provide it. And it is true, an individual school might not have that. They might not have the resources, they might not have the training, but then the answer is, we're gonna get that. Or we're gonna make sure your child goes to a different school or a different program where that is available, because that's our responsibility as a school system to make sure the child is making progress in school, succeeding in school. So it can never be about we as School X don't have the resources, or we don't have the training, or we don't have enough funds, or, you know, we don't typically do that, or we don't do that at this age for kids. It's about what this individual child needs, and then we have to figure out how to provide that.
Can you give parents a pro tip on that in terms of when that said to them, what's a pro tip response that a parent could give to say pretty much unacceptable?
Yeah, I would say my understanding of special education law and requirements is that if my child has the need for that intervention, this school district has to find a way to provide that. That's how I would respond to that. And then if the school folks at the table still seem either like they're in disagreement with that or don't know what to do with that statement, which might be the case, then I would ask for the meeting to reconvene with somebody who has the knowledge from the school district and has the ability to commit resources from the school district. One of the parts of the special ed law that is often not followed and not noticed is there is supposed to be someone at every IEP meeting with the ability to commit the resources of the school system. That doesn't happen very often. A lot of local schools meet And they know what they have available, and they really don't know what is available or what they can commit outside of their school. So I don't blame them for that. That's just the situation they're in. But then the answer is bring in a supervisor of special education, bring in a reading specialist, bring in someone from the central office of the school district who knows about what exists all over the school district and has the ability to commit resources and funds.
That is a golden nugget.
Yeah, and let me say, you know, finally along this topic is it is hard for parents to use that pro tip. You know, parents walk into these meetings and often it's one parent, sometimes two, and it might be 6, 8, 10 school system folks around the table. And it's intimidating. There's an assumption from most parents that the school system people know what they're saying to be true. As a parent, and I've experienced this in meetings for one of my own sons, as a parent, you don't even trust your judgment because you love your kid so much and you want what's best for them, but you don't know if you're overemphasizing the problem or underemphasizing the problem. So that's where it really helps a parent to have a special ed expert or advocate with them who knows the law, knows the school district, knows what they can and can't and should and shouldn't be able to commit based on any specific question or problem that comes up.
100%. 100%. And I always liken it is that you're walking into a crowded room or a party and all of a sudden the music stops, the voices stop, and they turn and look at you and that's the feeling you get when you walk as a parent, when you walk into an IEP meeting. It's, you know, even if it's on Zoom, it's all of a sudden it's quiet. People are looking at you and you're, like you said, one of two, and it can be very intimidating. And as a parent, you're leading from a place of fear and love. And so, you know, it's not just this one meeting for you. This is a lifetime of building the capacity of your baby to be successful in the future, education, employment, and independence. And so it is hard. I do love that pro tip, but even so, it's beneficial to have kind of a neutral person that's totally on your side that knows how to access what that child needs.
Well said. And I'll just say to the very last thing you said, totally on your side. We see ourselves as advocates for the children. And mm-hmm. So I think it's an important distinction. So we're going to be straight with parents in terms of actually what you're asking for doesn't seem to be reasonable because he is reading at such and such a level, which is acceptable. And, you know, understand why you're concerned, but that's what we really at this point don't need to be asking for an evidence-based intervention in this area from the school. So let's keep a watch on it. Let's agree with the school. We're going to do some monitoring and maybe try some other strategies. So, but again, we're laser focused on what does the child need at this time. And in fact, every time a parent calls us to engage us, I do all the intakes and I always say, you know, you can't hire us to get a specific outcome. You can That's only right. hire us to become an expert about your child. And then if you want us to, we will come to meetings to advocate for that expert opinion to become a reality.
That's right. And just helping parents kind of prioritize what makes sense for the immediate support for 6 months to a year to 5 years to kind of help, because it can be very overwhelming of what to ask for and what am I seeing in my child versus what the school is seeing. And oftentimes we're seeing the same things, but sometimes we're not. And so how to prioritize the needs of that individual child. So it really does come down to that specific child and how are we going to be strategic in supporting that child to be successful.
And let me say that, you know, the school and parents may have a different view of how the child is functioning right now. So how do we bridge that gap? It's crucial to bridge that gap. We have to come to a common understanding of how the child is functioning in reading, writing, math, social skills, social emotional well-being, executive functioning. So if we're in disagreement, then we need more information. And, you know, I just came out of a meeting last week where the parents and I believe the child should be classified as a student with autism, high functioning autism. He's also gifted. School system doesn't see the autism or doesn't think it is to the point where it's a disability. So that we have differing viewpoints and information. So the answer is, in this case, we need a independent educational evaluation, which is going to be funded by the school district to try and clarify this dispute we're having or disagreement we're having and get a definitive answer. So there's always more questions we can ask. There's always more information we can gather, but it's crucial that we come to a joint understanding of who the child is, what their strengths and challenges are.
Absolutely. And that was an excellent segue. Where do assessments start to come into play for boys?
So gosh, assessments are so valuable for understanding children and what their strengths and challenges are. And sometimes they're crucial. So when we see a student who's not making progress or is making minimal progress, and we come together and we share all of our information, but we really need to have more information about why isn't this boy making the progress that they should be making. At that point, we must have an assessment to look into the challenges. I've had experiences with my own two boys, one who was not reading at the level that he should be, and we needed to have an assessment, and we agreed after some up and back and discussion that the school would proceed with an assessment. And then I had another boy who was doing okay in school, doing average work. There wasn't any specific school problem, but my wife and I just wanted to understand what were his strengths, what were his challenges. Might there be some strength that we should be further paying attention to and developing? Might there be an area of challenge that we're overlooking? So we paid for that assessment, and that helped us to just get a good understanding of who he was and then proceeding to advocate for him appropriately.
What is your take then on public assessments through the public school system versus a private assessment or evaluation? As parents often ask, and I know they ask you as well, what is the difference? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, so I have a presentation that I do. So I'll give you the short version, which is to say that there are pros and cons, and there's no one definitive answer there. You might expect someone like me to say, oh, always get a private assessment. And I would not say that. There are the pros to having the school do it. First of all, it's no cost to parents. Secondly, there are a lot of very talented school psychologists who can do very thorough and in-depth and accurate assessment. Third, the school system is more likely to accept the results of their own assessment. So there's less likely going to be a battle to say whether the assessment results should be utilized and used for planning. So those are all the benefits. And then parents have a safeguard within that process, which is if they've decided to trust the school psychologist and proceed with that, but they disagree with the outcomes, disagree with the assessment that is finally done, they can assert their right, which is a legal right within the special ed law. They can assert their right to have the school system pay for a private evaluation after that public evaluation is done. School system does not have to say yes to that. They can take the parents to a mediation or even a hearing to fight the parents' request to do that. But in my experience, if there's good reasons to do it, school systems more often agree to do that where it's needed. So those are all the pros for the public side. The pros for the private side may be more obvious, that you're handpicking your assessor. You can, shop around for the person that you think is really the best when it comes to assessing your child's disability or suspected disability. You can look at possibly getting things done quicker than you would with the school if people have availability, which sadly these days people are so inundated that they don't have availability. But in a more normal time, you could also shop for that. You are in control of the assessment when it's done privately, so you can look at the results and you can share it or not share it with the school. I almost always recommend parents share it so that we can engage in this collaborative process of looking at that and deciding what to do. But if for some reason you're not happy with the results, don't think they're accurate, think they're too revealing about personal information about the family, you're in control of it. So those are some of the pros on the private side.
How do we support boys in defining their own success? So if we are saying that boys are challenged in school and that there's data backing this up in terms of their success rate and whether it's systemic or at an individual level, how can we help boys change their experience a bit?
So what I'm hearing, Wendy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's you're talking about helping boys to have expectations for their own success that might be defined differently than parents or school system or other influences are saying should be the area for success. Did I get that?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So that's a great question.
It's a complicated one.
Yeah. I think, you know, just like your son today said, well, that's interesting when you told him that you were having me as a guest today. I think we need to educate boys about the challenges that boys are having. And that, you know, this is not, it's not just them. and of course, it will vary from boy to boy how much they're experiencing those challenges, but that this is a systemic issue that we're seeing and that there are reasons for it. You know, there are brain-based reasons. Boys' brains are different than girls' brains. There's developmental reasons with those brain-based issues. There are some just flat out different organizations of our brain that make certain learning easier for boys versus girls, that there are things in the system, you know, that I've been talking about today that are not boy friendly, that, you know, we'd like to see changed. So given all of that, we understand why school may be difficult for you. And you may not be succeeding as well as you would hope to, or your parents would hope you would. So, you know, number one, understanding that maybe it's not your fault that things aren't going so well for you right now. And then in terms of expectations, which is what you asked, there's not just one route to life success, that certainly you don't have to go to an Ivy League college. Certainly you don't have to go to college at all. Certainly you can go to college and then leave college and pursue something else. You can pursue vocational training. You can pursue internships and job experiences. So there's many different ways to achieve life success. And there are so many great examples out there. Bill Gates, Steven Spielberg, the list goes on and on, of very successful male entrepreneurs who didn't go the traditional route with education. So I think all of that would help an individual boy feel better, relax about, you know, it's not just me, and I, and there is hope for me, and maybe I can become more of a self-advocate for what works for me. Maybe I can express to my teachers that I do better, just like I told you about my younger son. I do better when I can make a film instead of having to write an essay. I do better when it's hands-on, experiential. I do better if I can stand at my desk in the back of the room where I can move instead of sitting in this desk all day long. I do better if I can have periodic breaks. To be their own self-advocates is what comes out of that kind of self-awareness and change in expectations.
Which to me extends beyond the classroom, right? So if you're a better self-advocate, you know yourself as a learner, you know yourself as an individual, then when you go out into the world, post-secondary, whatever that looks like, and you're on the job, you have these skills to be able to advocate. So I think that's incredibly empowering for our students and for our boys.
I agree. The self-advocacy piece is such a huge piece. and it's developmental. So it's different. Kids are on different paths with developing that self-advocacy. They need instruction and support to develop their self-advocacy. They need to have people be receptive to their advocacy when they're advocating and encourage it. And too often I see schools say, well, you should be able to advocate for yourself. You're a seventh grader, you're a ninth grader, whatever the number is, you should be able to advocate for yourself. Well, that might be true of many boys or many girls, that they should be at that age. For this particular boy, they may need some instruction and role-playing and practice and opportunities, you know, to be successful with it. So we need to meet the child where they are on that journey, just like we need to meet them on the journey of learning to read and to write.
What are some of your favorite strategies for the IEP table that are aimed at success or to make sure they are doing more for boys' success?
So I think, are you asking what strategies to work effectively in collaboration with the IEP team? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Do you have some favorite strategies for professionals that they can start to incorporate in their work in supporting our boys and the success of boys?
Yeah, I think it comes back to some things we've already discussed, which is coming into those meetings, not blaming, not adversarial, with respect for the other individuals at that meeting, with curiosity about their perspective and a willingness to listen to that perspective. And then with the overarching goal of, we are all going to work together to understand who this boy is, what his strengths are, what his challenges are, and then what can we do together to help him to make progress. And you know, that only, that kind of collaborative meeting is only going to happen when all those other steps are in place, the respect, the listening, the genuine interest and curiosity in other people's perspectives.
If you could give parents three tips on supporting their boys in school, what would they be?
I think number one, to understand the challenges that are present to our boys, you know, to have some familiarity with those statistics, you know, what exists right now in the life of boys in school. Number two, I would say, is to emphasize the strengths. I think as parents, we tend to worry about what our kids aren't doing, you know, what their challenges are, you know, how is this going to play out when they go out into the world? But we don't, in my experience, pay enough attention to their strengths. So really, let's focus in on, what is this boy good at? What are they passionate about? What are they interested in? And I would say, spend more time nurturing and developing the strength than we do remediating in the weakness, because people are going to succeed in life because of developing their own strength. So that's number two, maybe it should have been number one. And number three tip would be to work with professionals to get an objective view of where the challenges and the strengths are, and then to identify those challenges and have a meaningful evidence-based plan for addressing those challenges. And that's, you know, you can get that as parents through private professionals, you know, in terms of good psychological assessment, through working with a advocate or special ed consultant who's going to provide an objective view, and then also certainly in working collaboratively with the school.
Can you take that same question and frame it for professionals? If I'm a professional, whether I'm in the school or a service provider in the community, what would be your top three tips to help us reframe what matters for boys?
So I think that would be along the same lines. You know, as parents, I think professionals need to understand the challenges that boys are facing. We haven't talked much, and maybe we could talk a little about why this issue has not gotten a lot of recognition and attention. And I think that includes from our professional community. I would really encourage professionals to look at the data, to read one or both of these books or other books that have been written about boys' issues, to really look at the information to understand what the challenges are and why they exist. Number two, then to join in advocating for changes that are going to benefit boys as a gender, systemically, and there are many, many possible changes, and I've discussed some of them today, and there are others, but to advocate for those wherever we can. And then number three, to go back to the micro level and really pay attention to the individual boys who are struggling academically, who are struggling emotionally, who have mental health challenges as a result of the struggles that they have been through, and to work to bring all the resources together, school, private, parents, to help this individual boy to make progress, to see their progress, and to flourish.
So good. So good. So as we wind down our conversation, I have two final questions for you. What should I have asked that I didn't know enough to ask?
I think we could probably spend another hour talking about why does this issue not get more publicity, more focus, more constructive work? And what are some of the other ways that we could be working to improve the school experience systemically for boys?
Can you give us a 30-second, which is super challenging, of the why?
So the why we're not paying attention to this issue.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think that rightly, beginning in the 1960s and 70s, we began putting a great focus on girls and women's issues. And thankfully we did. Girls were behind in almost every category and systemically being held back by a variety of barriers, teaching methodologies. We now have made tremendous progress in that area, and we're not done. We need to continue to pay attention and to work on those issues. Because of the climate of paying more attention to the issues of girls and women, I have found that when I wrote a book about boys, when I speak about boys, that there is a quick assumption that I might be an anti-feminist, that I might not care about girls' issues. And I've had some people say that to me. Are you trying to turn the clock back? Are you trying to go back to, you know, the way it was? And, you know, and hopefully you and your viewers can see clearly that I'm not. But that is, I'm just one part of this. I think that it happens to anyone who brings these issues up. There, I'll just finish this answer quickly, and I'm going over the 30 seconds, is in that there was a comprehensive study done in Great Britain in 2005 called Raising Boys' Achievement. I think it was Cambridge University. It was thorough, evidence-based, came up with very specific recommendations. I never hear that talked about, never. Maybe in Great Britain, hopefully it was talked about, but they still have challenges there with the same issue. But I've never heard it talked about in the United States. Again, it's politically incorrect to really focus on this. And sadly, it's impacting our boys.
I feel like you're absolutely right. We could continue this conversation, and hopefully it's bringing awareness to what we can do both on that macro level and micro level to better support our boys and all the students that we serve, and to better advocate for them for educational outcomes and also life outcomes as well. What would it be and why, if you could have a billboard with one tip for parents? Final question.
One tip for parents: pay attention to your boys' strengths and develop them.
Love it. I love it.
If they could only do one thing, that would make a huge difference.
It was such an honor and a pleasure to chat with you today. And I hope we are empowering folks that are listening to move forward and do better with what we're doing and doing the work and serving families and students as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for providing me with this opportunity to speak about this important topic, and love conversing with you about it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you again for listening, and thank you, Rich, for having this discussion with us. My three special ed strategy takeaways from our episode today include: focus on and nurture the strengths of your child. Specifically, this conversation was around boys. And come curious with the perspective on how can we help a student learn. Come curious, meaning to that table with a conversation, to be open to other people's perspective and curious on how to improve that student's outcomes. And last, be objective in the sense of gaining that perspective of gaps and gains on an individual child, and think thoughtfully and out of the box how we can do better and supporting that student in their learning outcomes. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for free tips? Head over to learningessentialsedu.com. You can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting, plus bonus questions to ask. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide an individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching, educational therapy, and BrainCamp, our executive function support model. If you are a parent, I've got you covered through IEP coaching. Hope this helps make it a great day.